Hello.
Hi.
And welcome
to Ghoul Society. That's my big sister Jamie.
And that's my little sister Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
So now we're on to the hunt of Clifford Olson. By August of 1981, the public was extremely panicked. They were like, yeah. What the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. Headlines read, quote, cunning killer with blazing eyes, end quote, and, quote, hot summer helps slayer elude police, end quote.
Okay.
The Vancouver Sun was having a field day with these headlines.
Yeah, they fucking were.
During this time, a task force directed by Superintendent Bruce Northorp was building. They're like, okay, we need everyone to be on the same page. And this task force relied heavily on coordinating the investigation between detachments and felt that every consideration about the case should be counted.
Yeah.
And to not forget anything and not to rush their work. They're like, we need to be methodical. We need to take our time.
Yes.
But two large problems affected the investigation. Transfers of key personnel just around, you know, RCMP people move around to different detachments and staff shortages. So they're like, this is why this is such a fucking dumpster fire.
Right.
Because no one's staying at the same place on the same case all the time.
Yeah. That makes sense.
During this time of policing, there was usually only one single decision maker, which resulted in subordinates criticizing those in charge. And that's exactly why Bruce Northorp was named coordinator of the task force. Because people were just kind of bickering about what they thought happened to these kids.
Okay.
Essentially.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I think it's this. And then someone else will be like, well, that's dumb. So then they were like, we need one person to make all the decisions.
Wow. Wow.
And it was this Superintendent Northorp. Finally, Olson was under surveillance again.
Good.
Though he slipped through the cracks a lot. Those watching him would claim that he stopped randomly in the middle of the road, made unexpected U-turns, went down one-way alleys, and he continuously changed his rental car. He'd drive a Pinto and a Mustang the next day, and then he'd drive a Honda, and then he'd drive a truck.
Crazy.
And then he'd drive an SUV.
And he's just driving around aimlessly.
Yep. He knew they were there.
Yeah. And he's also probably trying to, like, find places to dump future victims, too.
Yeah, or like, pick up future victims.
Yeah.
Olson apparently drove over 20,000 kilometers in 3 months. And what? In three different rental cars.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he'd just be driving.
That's insane.
I know.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. In early August of 1981, Olson came to Victoria.
Oh.
God knows why. He just did it.
Okay.
And he burglarized two homes while he was here.
Okay.
And then he drove up to Nanaimo.
Wow.
Yeah. On August 12th, he pulled over on the highway to pick up two women hitchhiking. Around 3 hours later, his car was seen swerving across the highway.
What the fuck?
Just before Long Beach. And, like, from a helicopter. Just, like, helicopter. Because they knew he was here.
Wow.
Yeah, the RCMP knew he was here. So they're, like, helicopter surveilling him on the highway.
Yeah. Wait, Long Beach to Fino?
I think so. I don't really know. Yeah. I'm kind of confused.
Because there is no Long Beach on the east.
I know.
Side.
So, yeah. So I think maybe he was, like, driving up to Nanaimo and then picked up these women who probably wanted to go to Tofino.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's three hours later. Yep. Yeah.
Totally makes sense.
So he turns off onto a dirt road. Minutes later, two RCMP cars, by help of the helicopter crew, blocked the entrance of this logging road.
Good.
Pull over spot, wherever.
Good.
And they followed the road down, and they see Olson get, like, out of the car with two women.
Yeah.
Olson spotted the police emerging from the forest because they're, like, also in the woods.
Good.
And he sprints to his car and he's like trying to drive back to the highway. He gets in the car. He drives back. Roadblock, bitch.
Good. Fuck you.
The RCMP charged him with impaired reckless driving, impounded his car, and took him in.
Nice.
When searching the car, the police found an address book with Judy Cosma's name in it. So they were like, you're being charged with the murder of Judy Cosma.
What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How is that enough evidence at all? Listen. That sounds like that would just be like, look, not enough.
Well, I don't know if they initially charged him with it when they were there. Like, he was charged with impaired driving because he was drunk, obviously.
He's drunk. Based off the book.
Well, they're just like, this adds to the evidence. I don't know.
Crazy.
At this time that he was arrested on August 12th, only 3 of the 11 murdered children were found and identified.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Yeah. On August 18th.
Those two women are so fucking lucky.
I know.
Were they okay? Like, I don't
understand. Yeah, nothing really happened.
Okay.
Fine. They were probably like, what the fuck?
They were probably also been given alcohol and...
Probably.
Maybe sleeping pills, maybe not yet. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. So on August 18th, this is when he was charged with the first degree murder of Judy. But they were probably like, why do you have this address book of this child?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Had they found Judy's body at that point or not yet? Like, I know they found the 3 bodies, but...
Yes. Judy was found on July 25th.
Okay.
So they had found her body.
Good.
Yes. When Olson was brought forth, like, when this charge was brought to him, he was like, I did it. You're so right. I killed her. He confessed right away. He was just like, yeah, that was me.
What the fuck? Okay.
A few days later, on August 21st,
get fucked.
Olson told the police he would give them 11 bodies for $100,000. He's like, the first one's a freebie, and then I want 10 grand for each body that I give you. Because they didn't know where the others were.
Wait. He's bribing the police. He's bribing law enforcement. I think that's a crime.
Yeah, so you're going to hate what happens next.
Oh, no.
Superintendent Northrop was really feeling the pressure because they didn't have concrete evidence that Olson murdered the missing children.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, yeah, I killed them. And they're like, okay, but we don't have evidence.
Yeah.
You can say something, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But the police were hoping that Olson was dumb enough to give them all of the information, even though it would result in him spending his life in prison. You're like, is he narcissistic enough to be like, yeah, look at what I did.
True.
And not even think about that.
But he wanted the money, so.
Yeah, so it's said that Olson proposed a schedule to finding the bodies of the children he murdered. And he wanted them found in a specific order.
Okay.
He wanted them to find Louis Chartrand first, then Colleen Dagnault, then Terry Lynn Carson, Ada Court, Sandra Wolf Steiner, Simon Partington, and then Sigrund Arnd.
Why?
I don't know.
He's such a fucked up fuck.
I know. Truly. Sorry,
it's the only word that can come to my head now is fuck. No, actually.
He is a true, like, psychopath.
That is so weird.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So what? They're like, sure, whatever. And we'll give you your fucking 10,000. But, like, okay. I'm interested in that part, but continue. Yeah.
So he's kind of giving them some locations, but Northrop was like, you're just playing with us to try to escape. Because I think Olson wanted to be there. He's like, I'll bring you to the bodies.
Classic.
And Superintendent Northrop was like, you're just gonna try to escape.
Okay.
But they did bring him along.
Yeah.
Each time he directed them to a body, he was cuffed to an officer.
I was literally imagining he was
handcuffed to an officer.
Yeah, yeah.
And at least 2 more were there at all times, along with whoever.
Yeah.
He had 3 people on him, and then whoever was being directed.
Yeah.
In 1982, this deal was exposed to the media, and the public was outraged.
How could they be? Did they do the money?
Yes.
They gave him the money?
Yeah. They gave it to his wife.
Yeah.
But, like, well, to him. But no, but, like, to the Olsen estate, whatever the fuck. Yeah. So, yes, they gave him $100,000.
I thought it was illegal to bribe law enforcement.
Yeah, listen, the 80s is so messed up.
Okay. Okie dokie.
Superintendent Northorpe found it, quote, unthinkable that he should be paid to provide evidence, end quote. Yeah. And that the proposition to pay his wife was unnecessary. They weren't separated. And so Olsen gained just as much as Joan did.
Yeah, except that he's in prison.
Yeah, but he still can access that money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, within reason, yes.
So despite this, there was an air of relief for officers and the public to know that the murders were being solved and no more children would die at the hands of Olsen.
Good.
With items belonging to four victims whose bodies were found with Olsen's assistance, the Attorney General of BC could guarantee a first-degree murder conviction, and they could ensure to bring closure to the families of the victims, knowing their child's murderer was behind bars, and they could also subdue the terror across the province. They're like, great, we did it.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah. Jeesh, took him long enough, but yeah. Okay.
The day before Olsen was charged with the murder of Judy Cosma, his wife and infant son were allowed to visit him.
Okay.
Blink, blink. For 2 hours.
Okay.
Olsen later claimed to a CBC reporter, quote, I could not stop crying during those 2 hours. I told my wife that I was responsible for the deaths of the children and that I cannot live with myself nor have any peace of mind until I confess what I had done and give back the bodies to their families for a proper Christian burial.
Fuck him.
Eye roll.
He's fucking just acting.
I know.
He's just totally acting.
Oh, I know. My wife told me that if I told the police what I did, they would lock me up in jail for the rest of my life, and I would probably be killed in jail.
Good.
She said that she would tell our son when he grew up, and everyone was teasing him at school for what his father had done.
Oh, well.
I told her it will be up to me to tell my son what has happened.
Okay.
I know in my heart that I must give up my wife and son for the rest of my life. My son will have no father to call daddy, and he'll grow up knowing his father for the sins he has done. True.
Yeah.
And my wife will always bear my mistake for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
She told me that I must do what is right, and she'll always love me, and that someday we would be in heaven together, praising the Lord together. End quote.
Okay.
I don't think you can go... I don't know if you can actually... atone for the sin of murder.
No.
I don't think...
Not 11 children. No. And also, no. I would never... Okay. Okay. Oh my God. I'm so mad at this woman. First of all, he's never home. He's driving 20,000 kilometers in 3 months.
I know.
He's not at home.
No.
He's absolutely not at home.
No.
I guess he's bringing in money from his construction company.
Yeah.
He's not fucking helping you raise that child.
No.
And also, you still love him?
Yeah.
Red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag. I know. 1 million red flags.
I know.
You love him? He killed 11 kids.
I know. I was thinking about that the other day because yes to that. The only thing I will say is that I understand if it is difficult once you hear that. To just all of a sudden stop loving the person you thought you knew.
And to know that it's, like, actually true. Like, it's one thing to hear about something. It's another thing to, like, really believe it and know it as truth.
Because you're like, wow, I have loved this person. And we created a child together.
Yeah.
And you're telling me this?
Yeah.
Like, what?
I know.
Yeah. So I kind of understand that she's like, okay, well, I love you because it's like, I don't know if you can just kind of stop loving someone in that moment. But it's also like, girl, I also saw somewhere that I think I kind of talk about this maybe in a bit, but like about the money thing that Joan was like, well, he abused me too.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, well, I didn't find anything else about that, so I don't know why you're bringing that up now.
Yeah. Well, maybe some time passed and she healed and she realized that he's actually a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, I know.
And then she's like, okay, I can share this thing.
Yeah.
But Yeah, weird.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay.
There were four other suspected murder victims for which Olsen wasn't tried for. Verna Bjerke, she was 17 years old from the Hope, Yale area. Pamela Darlington from Kamloops. Monica Jack from Kilchina. And Marnie Jameson from Gibson's, BC. During the 1980s, it was confusing to police that one person could and would kill both boys and girls, spanning multiple age groups. Also during this time, serial killers were relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah.
And thus poorly understood. And so this led RCMP to rely on their experience with pedophiles who tend to focus on specific sex or age demographics. And we know now that Olsen was a psychopath. Yeah. He was a thrill seeker. He was charismatic and manipulative and cunning. And he had no remorse at all for what he did.
Yeah.
He just lied to his wife. He doesn't give a shit.
No. No, of course not.
No. He doesn't care.
Nope.
He does not care at all. So that was him getting arrested. Yay, he's arrested.
Good. Holy moly.
Yeah. His trial was held in January of 1982. It had only been a year. He did all of that in a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually. Like, I guess it didn't take them that long, the police, to figure it out. Because
because he killed in July, he killed like six kids.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
His trial lasted 3 days. That's it.
Yeah.
He was being charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder at first. Just 10 counts. Judge Harry McKay claimed...
Just 10.
Quote, "I don't have the words to describe the enormity of your crimes and the heartbreak and anguish you have caused so many people. No punishment a civilized country could give you could come close to being adequate. You should never be granted parole for the remainder of your day. It would be foolhardy to let you at large," end quote.
And that's so eloquently put. That's kind of what I was describing of like... It's like you want to put him to death, but you can't because it's you're a civilized country.
Yeah, he's like, if we still have the death penalty, bye.
Yeah, literally.
The trial ended when Olsen changed his plea to guilty from not guilty within hours of the court proceedings.
That's crazy.
Rumor is that interview tapes of him talking in a high-pitched, whiny voice made it obvious that he came off as weak and not very bright. And he was like, maybe that made me look bad. I don't know. The jury deliberated for 15 minutes. And they accepted Olsen's plea changed to guilty of 10 counts of murder. After this, the prosecution brought forward an additional charge of murder for the death of Sandra Wolfsteiner, which was accepted as a guilty plea as well.
Good.
Olsen was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. That's the maximum you can get in Canada.
Yeah.
And Crown Prosecutor John Hall told the Vancouver Sun that it was the most sad and bizarre case he'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Calling Olsen an, quote, inadequate psychopath, end quote, and noting that he, quote, doesn't have a conscience, end quote.
Yep.
Olsen's lawyer, Shantz, told reporters that they considered an insanity plea, but that
Clifford He's not insane.
Olsen didn't fit the definition of insanity according to the criminal code.
Yeah, no, he's not.
No. Shantz claimed that Olsen recognized that he suffered from a mental disorder. Quote, he's asked for medical help, end quote. This was mentioned in connection to claiming that Olsen's motive was cloudy. But is it cloudy? Because he knew what he was doing. He preyed on those children.
Yeah, having a motive is different from the action. Like, your motive is your reasoning, right? Yeah. So it's like, he doesn't really know his reasoning. Obviously, something is fucked up in his head.
Yeah.
He obviously needs, like, help for that.
That's true.
But
being a psychopath doesn't give you an excuse to do those things. There are psychopaths who live normal lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
With the proper help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, totally.
So it's like, hello?
Yeah.
But lawyers do what, you know, he had to do what he got to do.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, yeah, they would have looked for an insanity plea.
Yeah.
Because that's his job as a lawyer.
True. Yikes.
So I'll say again that it was difficult to find the information regarding the events leading up to each victim's murder and what Olsen was doing throughout the spring and summer of 1981 when he wasn't killing Vancouver's children.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean. He's just driving around.
Yeah. And it's mainly due to the trial and him changing his plea to guilty so quickly, because originally this trial was supposed to last months.
Oh.
People were preparing for it to be like 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
And I assume that Olsen didn't want the world to know exactly what he did to those kids.
Fuck him.
In a way, this allowed him to have the last say in what would be given to the public.
Right.
As...
Yeah.
Yeah. We know who he murdered and how they were murdered, but there is little media of each individual victim and their last day on Earth, even in relation to the hours they spent with Olsen before he murdered them. I saw in a lot of articles that it's thought he sexually assaulted many, if not all, of his victims.
Yeah.
Not just Terry Lynn Carson.
Yeah, I believe it.
And all the information I gathered is really from previous and archived news articles from the 80s.
Hmm.
Wikipedia, Murderpedia, and a few interviews with Olsen himself while he was in prison.
Yeah.
But even then, again, he was banned from speaking with the media. So
right.
It was difficult for the media to speak with him.
Yeah.
And they spoke under the guise of him talking to his lawyers. Wow. It's like, I have a lawyer call, and it was the media. It was like Peter Worthington talking to him.
That's crazy, dude. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
As a collective, the parents of the murdered children wrote to the federal solicitor general, named Kaplan at the time. They wrote, quote, "We are suffering further injury at the present from the knowledge that Clifford Olsen has benefited financially mm-hmm. from the murder of our children.
Mm-hmm.
This is further aggravated by the fact that Mr. Olsen may benefit yet again through publication of his disgusting, wicked, perverted story.
Yeah.
Clifford Olsen derives obvious personal delight at the publicity that has been given to him and knows no moral boundary that will prevent him from collecting financially, either directly or indirectly, from the sales of his memoirs," end quote.
Yeah.
The families were put through way more hardships, as the federal government apparently withheld their family allowance checks when their children were missing.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Because they were like runaways, quote, unquote. That's so crazy.
Mm-hmm. After a while, the families ended up suing, naming Olsen, his wife Joan, his lawyer Shantz, and his other lawyer McNeeney. That was the lawyer who looked over the cash deal.
Mm.
So they were like, okay, fuck you guys. We're suing all of you.
Yeah. Nice.
And there was further uproar when in November of 1981, Olsen was secretly flown to BC from Kingston, Ontario, where he was serving his sentence.
What?
Because he was like...
Wait, 81? Don't you mean 91? Because wasn't he caught until then?
No, he was
caught the same year.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, right, yes. Holy shit.
So people were like, why the fuck is he being privately flown back to BC? And it was because Olsen was like, I know where more bodies are. But he didn't. He was fucking lying.
Wow.
So then they were like, okay, back to Ontario, you go.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. In the fall of 1984, the Supreme Court reexamined what they were calling the cash for bodies deal of $100,000. This was due to the victims' families beginning the action to sue the Olsen estate. Though a few of them agreed in principle to the payments, they were like, well, that was the only way to get him to talk.
Yeah.
They agreed with that.
Yeah.
They agreed that the police should be like, no, give it back.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, oh, just kidding.
Yeah.
Like, oh, freeze that account. Just kidding.
Yeah.
You're not taking that money.
Absolutely.
There was no sympathy from the victim's family shown to Joan or her husband or her son. Sorry.
Yeah.
Apparently, her son was actually being called Demon Seed. And Rosemary's baby in the press. Oh, it's like, okay,
that's fucked
Clifford
up.
Olsen's son had nothing to do with it.
No, he's fully innocent.
Like, leave him alone. He's a child.
Yeah.
Okay. At one point in court, Joan stated, quote, "It floors me that anyone would think I had anything to do with it. I cried. I cried a lot about it at first. I don't know how to explain it. I really don't think too much about them now. I'm glad the children are buried. Oh, I hate him. I hated him for the night he held a knife to my throat. He terrorized me, scared me, beat me. There was no one I could turn to," end quote.
Wait, but, okay, yes.
Although she later recounted, quote, "He has a way with words, and I've yet to see a woman who hasn't been attracted to him. I don't know what it is, really. I like to say it was his brown eyes, but it couldn't have been just that," end quote.
Okay, well,
so I'm like, Joan, you're kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I get it. She's a victim of abuse, obviously.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
sad. And she
probably
just had to say what she had to say to him.
Yeah.
Like, when she was like, "I love you no matter what."
Yeah. Well, and it's sad, too, because when I was trying to figure out Olsen's life before the murders,
mm-hmm.
I read that Joan's previous marriage, she was divorced. Her previous marriage was really abusive.
Okay.
So it's just like awful if she was in that again.
Yeah.
And then this happened in your second marriage.
Yeah. Cycles of abuse. I feel like that is pretty common, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Justice Traynor of the Supreme Court ruled that the money plus interest was to be returned.
Good.
But on March 11th, 1996, the Court of Appeal reversed this decision due to some kind of error or loophole or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Political fucking law stuff. So Joan Olsen could keep the money. She said, quote, "I think the money was given to me in good faith. I don't have a guilty conscience. I can look at myself in the mirror and say, you're a good person. Don't be ashamed," end quote.
Yes, you're a good person, but I would not accept
blood money.
But yeah, it's blood money. It's fucking blood money. You're giving me money because my husband killing 11 children.
Yeah.
Like, on one hand, I a little bit understand, but no, that should go to the victims' families.
That's what I thought.
Absolutely.
I know.
Absolutely.
I don't know how she thinks the money was given to her in good faith.
No.
It wasn't at all.
It wasn't. That's
it literally wasn't.
No.
He made a deal with the police.
It's bribey blood money.
Yeah.
Girl.
I know. I was like, Joan, why did you say that to the public?
Yeah, and why would you, even if you think it...
Keep it to yourself. Don't say it to the media.
That's an inside thought, Joan.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she gained from the loss of these children's lives.
Yeah.
I wouldn't keep it.
No.
Even if I had a child.
No.
Because clearly she's like, I need money. I have a kid. I understand
that.
I get it. That family should go to the victims' families.
Yeah. The money.
Yeah.
You mean, yeah.
Yeah. What did I say?
You said the family should go to the victims' families.
I don't know. In August of 1997, after serving 16 years in prison, Clifford Olsen applied under Section 745 of the Criminal Code, which was the Faint Hope Clause. This section of the Criminal Code in Canada allows prisoners who have been sentenced to life to appeal their conviction after serving 15 years. The Faint Hope Clause was introduced when the death penalty was abolished and was added to encourage convicted first and second degree murderers to rehabilitate themselves.
Okay.
The government was like, you have 15 years to rehabilitate yourself and then ask for a parole.
Okay, except that our prisons aren't designed to rehabilitate.
I know.
So...
Yeah. So in 2009, the conservative government introduced a bill to abolish the Faint Hope Clause.
Interesting.
And it kind of just sat there. The bill didn't really move around. I don't really know what happened. And so the bill was reintroduced in 2010 and it was passed. So it's no longer available for any offenses committed after December 2011.
Interesting. Oh, so the bill, the Faint Hope Clause doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Okay. It's like, I like that. I like that
clause.
But our
system isn't designed for that.
No. And in some instances, I think that that is a great opportunity. And there are people who, commit second degree, first degree murder in instances where they don't have any other choice.
Yeah.
Or whatever. There's so many different situations mm-hmm. for something like that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. For a child serial killer, no.
Yeah, right?
That's the thing. Like, I feel like there should be some kind of clause depending on...
I know.
...what you've done.
Like a footnote.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Little asterisks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also noted on Wikipedia that people convicted of multiple murders that occurred after January 1997 weren't eligible to apply for a reduction in their parole eligibility period. So
but he was before.
Mm-hmm. So they did that because of him.
Oh.
Because he was like, I should be released because of the faint hope clause. And then they were like, in 1997, they were like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But then they were like, oh, too late. He can still apply.
Oh.
But he helped change our laws.
Okay.
Around that.
Okay.
So kind of, I don't know, maybe helpful. So during this appeal, Olson acted as his own attorney. Isn't that great?
Fucking Bundy up in this bitch.
He was like, I should get an early parole because there's other unsolved crimes that I need to confess to that I committed with a friend.
Bro, fuck off.
And also, I was involved in the Green River murders in Seattle,
which
is literally impossible.
Yeah, no.
So go fuck yourself.
Okay.
A forensic psychiatrist named Dr. Stanley Simrow called Olson, quote, completely untreatable, more dangerous than in 1981 because he thoroughly enjoys celebrity status, trying to claim the title as ultimate serial killer,
end quote. God. Uh-huh. Oh, God. Okay. Oh, God. Oh, God.
He claimed that Olson was addicted to murder and was the most pathological and disturbed personality he'd ever witnessed. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yes.
At the end of the parole trial, the jury took 15 minutes to return a verdict of rejecting his bid for parole.
Yeah.
Clearly. Olson was sure he'd get out, but he was sent back to Kingston Penn. They were like, bye. Mm-hmm. Have fun in one of the worst prisons ever.
Yeah.
The last time Constable Maley, remember him? From Whitespot.
Oh, yes.
The last time Constable Maley saw Olson, he reportedly asked what he would do if he got out. And Olson replied, I take up where I left off.
What?
He literally said that to a police officer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah. And so Olson was entitled to parole hearings in 2006 and 2010 as well, because that's how our system works.
Okay.
You can apply every few years.
Yep.
Both of which were denied. Okay. During his 2006 parole trial, he made wild accusations about knowing intel about 9/11. Yeah, he was like, I talked to some of the terrorists from 9/11.
Okay, so he's just losing it. He's actually becoming... Actually, maybe
he's just saying whatever psychotic. I think he's just saying whatever to get out.
You think he doesn't actually believe it? He knows that he's lying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's just being manipulative.
I see.
Yeah. He loved being the center of attention and continuously wanted to manipulate people into believing outlandish stories.
Right.
Darren Johnsrud's stepdad. So Darren was one of the victims. His stepdad, Gary Rosenfeld, along with some of the other parents and family members of the victims, had some concerns about our justice system in that Olson had the right to apply for parole every year.
Wow.
They had to go to parole hearings almost every year.
Holy shit.
Could you imagine? You have to relive the death of your child all the time.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
I think that our justice system needs to be more rehabilitative, but that is pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
That's trauma central.
Yeah.
I don't think
I don't think that they should need to go.
But they have to go for victim impact statements.
Yeah, I know. But like,
yeah,
that's not okay.
Yeah, anyway. So after Darren's death, his stepdad, Gary, actually launched a group called the Canadian Resource Center for Victims of Crime.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's kind of nice.
That's lovely.
In 2010, the media found out that Olson was receiving two financial government payments while being imprisoned.
Wow.
Totaling over $1,000 each month.
Wow.
The first one was old age security pension, which anyone over the age of 65 is eligible to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was guaranteed income supplement, which is given to the elderly who have low income.
Mm.
And this money was being held in a trust for him.
Wow.
The public was pissed.
Yeah.
The public was like, absolutely fucking not.
Yeah.
How about, yeah. No, he's going to be in there for the rest of his life. Why are you giving him money?
Yeah.
You know?
Crazy.
The Canadian Taxpayers Federation testified before the Federal Committee for Human Resources Development to have Bill C-31 passed, which would end pension benefits for prisoners.
Oh.
Don't really like that.
That there is needs a little bit much.
There needs to be some kind of middle ground.
In between, yeah.
Like, can't there be a gray area?
There should be, because nothing's fucking black and white.
Exactly.
And, like, the justice system is so black and white.
Yeah. Like, should he have been receiving that money? No.
Probably not.
I don't think so.
Should someone else who's in prison be receiving it?
Probably. Or, like, I don't know, give it to the prison system to make it better?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or
it's difficult.
Or maybe just, like, a different rehab system altogether.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, put it into the justice prison system to make it better, make it rehabilitative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
This organization, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, also presented the government with a petition containing 46,000 signatures requesting that Olson no longer received his financial benefits.
Wow.
I don't think
that's enough, though.
It's not a lot. Prime Minister Stephen Harper asked MPs to look into the issue, which resulted in the termination of Olson's payments in June of 2010.
Wow.
And this is kind of funny. In September of 2010, Olson sent one of his, like, he sent money to Harper's campaign for re-election.
Oh.
He's like, you cut off my money, but here's some money, bro.
What the hell?
I don't know.
Weird. So they didn't actually pass that bill, C-31.
No, not that.
They just cut off his money.
I think it has been passed.
Yeah, because I feel like I recognize it.
It's very common.
Is it? I don't think.
Oh, B. What? That's the wrong bill.
C-31 is something else.
Yeah, that's an indigenous.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's about the Indian Act.
Yeah.
What? Then what? Oh, it's also in the Criminal Records Act. Oh, why are there bills named the same thing?
Oh. Oh, like in different.
In different contexts.
I see.
Oh, that's frustrating. I don't like that at all.
Me neither.
Anyway. Not that Bill C-31.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. I don't know why they can do that.
They cut off his money.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure that anyone who's in prison can't receive pension benefits.
Wow.
But maybe they probably changed it. I don't know. That was 25 years ago. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was 15 years ago. Time is a construct.
Time keeps on slipping into the future.
In September of 2011, it was reported that Olson had terminal cancer.
Good.
And had been transferred to a hospital in Laval, Quebec.
Mm.
He died on September 30th at the age of 71. Christine Weller will forever remain 12 years old. Colleen Dagnall will be 13 years old. Darren Johnsrud, 16 years old. Sandra Wolfsteiner, 16 years old. Ada Court, 13 years old. Simon Partington, 9 years old. Judy Cosma, 14 years old. Raymond King Jr., 15 years old. Sigrun Arndt, 18 years old. Terry Lynn Carson, 15 years old. And Louise Chartrand will forever be 17 years old.
Mm.
And that is the story of Clifford Olson.
Wow.
He named himself the Beast of BC.
Okay.
Because he's a fucking narcissist.
That. Don't fucking call him that then.
Yeah.
Wow, Sarah. Thank you for sharing that really tragic, really, really sad story.
Yeah.
I hope that the victims' families are able to find some peace with Olsen's death.
A lot of them did. A lot of them, like, they talked to the media quite a bit when he died. And a lot of them called each other and were like, he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to
have a party about it.
Yeah, because Olsen was a part of their lives for 30 years.
Yeah.
That's a really long time.
Longer than how old their kids were.
Yeah, exactly.
Like double, almost triple for some of them.
They were like...
The 9-year-old also.
Yeah. They'll forever be connected to him. But now that he's passed, it does bring a little bit extra closure just because they don't have to hear about their kid's death anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I hope that also... the victims, their spirits were able to find peace and move on, and that they're not reliving the experience because that would be fucking hell.
Yeah.
And I hope that Olsen suffered, and I wish that they didn't bring him to a hospital and they just let him suffer the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
But I guess we live in a humane society, so...
So, kind of had to bring him to the hospital. LOL that he got cancer.
Yeah, LOL, indeed.
So...
And don't get into people's cars.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't trust something that is too good to be true.
Yeah.
No matter where it's coming from.
Exactly.
And we thank you for listening.
Thank you, everybody. Sorry that I traumatized you.
And we hope that you take care of yourselves.
Yes. And take some time to go into the sun after listening to this. Hopefully you didn't listen to this all in one. It's like it's been 2 hours.
Oh. Yeah. whoops. So sorry, but not whoopsies. Sorry. It's
the longest episode ever.
And we hope that you keep listening. And we also, I mean, not we, but if you, dear listener, have any questions, comments, concerns, critiques, or criticisms, corrections, thank you. I always forget the five C's.
Yeah,
on the Q. You can email us at
ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
You can find us on Instagram and give us a DM at
ghoulsocietypod.
And you can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
And leave us a 5-star review.
Yes, please.
Please and thank you.
Also find all of our show notes, resources, and trigger warnings in each episode's description box. Thanks for listening.
Bye.